Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're embarking on, well, really a journey into one of the most foundational stories in the Bible. Feels pretty audacious, actually. Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving into Genesis, specifically Genesis 13, verses 15 to 18. This is a real moment where these ancient divine promises, they just collide with profound human faith. So our mission for this deep dive, using the sources you shared, is really to pull out those important nuggets, you know, what our material calls the Hebrew flavor, humor, and depth, stuff that really illuminates Abram's journey and God's, well, frankly, expansive promises. But hang on, before we jump right into that divine encounter, let's just quickly set the scene. You'll remember the immediate context, right? The separation of Abram and Lot. Lot, making what looked like a pretty shrewd move, you know, worldly-wise. He looked out, saw the lush Jordan Valley, and chose that. It seemed like he was leaving Abram with the less than prime real estate. You can almost hear him thinking, good luck with that dry scrub land, Uncle Abram. That's a very human decision, right? And it happens immediately before God steps in, kind of sets the stage.
Yeah, and what's truly fascinating here is exactly that timing. God steps in, like, right away, immediately after Lot makes this very human, maybe even self-serving choice. And there's no, you know, Abram, why did you let him choose first? No scolding, no lamenting about, oh, you got stuck with the poor land, nothing like that. Instead, God just steps right in to reaffirm and, this is critical, significantly expand his covenant with Abram. It's a huge turning point. It just completely shifts the focus away from Lot's immediate sight-based choices and onto God's unwavering eternal guarantee. It's like a divine course correction. Puts everything in perspective.
The implications of that promise coming right then, right after Lot leaves, that's pretty profound, isn't it? Because, yeah, Lot heads off, makes his choice, and then boom, God speaks directly to Abram. Verse 15, and the core promise is just so striking. For all the land you see, I will give to you and to your seed forever.
I mean, given Abram's situation right then, that sounds almost audacious.
It absolutely does. And what makes it so significant right here, especially with Abram having just watched Lot take what looked like the best bit, is the incredible finality, the scope of this promise. Our sources really hammer home the power of that word, forever. In Hebrew, it's adolam, and the emphasis is, look, this isn't some temporary lease, it's not conditional, it's eternal, enduring, a permanent gift from God. It's a promise that just blows past generations, human limits, everything.
That is a staggering declaration.
Wow, and it's such a stark contrast with Lot, isn't it? Lot lifted up his eyes, basically took possession by sight, by what looked good right now. But Abram here, he receives his promise. Well, not by what he sees or grabs with his own eyes. He gets it through God's direct spoken word. How does thinking about that contrast deepen things for us?
Oh, the contrast is fundamental, absolutely key. Lot's driven by what he sees right now, you know, immediate visual appeal, what looks prosperous today. But Abram, at this specific moment, he has no army, no city walls, no, like, property portfolio. He just has his tent, his nomadic tent, and the solid foundation of God's word. That's it. And yet, God guarantees him all the land, permanently. It just completely underscores the power of a divine promise over anything you can see or touch right now, over any human calculation. It's really about faith in the unseen, isn't it? Trusting God's declaration over grabbing what's visible, it sort of redefines what having something really means.
But God wasn't done, not by a long shot, right? Because the very next verse, verse 16, the promise gets even bigger. It expands beyond just land. Now it includes this incredible lineage. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth. I mean, think about it. For a man who at this point has zero children and isn't exactly young, that must have been just mind-boggling.
Absolutely mind-boggling. And the imagery itself, dust, kafare in the Hebrew, that's really key. Our sources point out, you know, dust is humble. It's certainly not glamorous. We try to get rid of it, but it's everywhere. It's universal. And crucially, it's countless. You just can't number it. So it signifies this immense, unfathomable scale of Abram's future descendants. It takes this really ordinary, everyday thing, dust, describes something utterly extraordinary, beyond human grasp. It's almost like humorous in a way, isn't it? Your family's going to be like that stuff you keep sweeping up.
Yeah. And that connection you mentioned, linking afari dust back to human origins, that's fascinating. How do the sources dig into that?
It's a really beautiful touch, actually, because humanity itself, Adam, was made from afar, from dust. So it's almost as if God is saying, look, I'm going to fill the earth with new humanity, a whole new people through your line. I'm transforming mortality itself into this miraculous multiplication. And that powerfully flips the script on dust, right? Usually we think humility, mortality, maybe even insignificance. But here, dust symbolizes extraordinary abundance, life, growth. It does raise that question, though.
How does something so seemingly mundane, so ordinary, become this powerful sign, almost paradoxical? It really challenges our ideas of what's valuable or significant, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And there's this this really elegant symmetry that the sources point out to, and the promises themselves. Abram gets land, area, and seed, Zerah. The seed goes into the earth, the Reah, and the seed multiplies like the earth's dust, the Afer, Haria. It just ties everything together. Heaven's word, earth's reality in this one, sort of sweeping, interconnected promise, feels complete, but also totally overwhelming for Abram, surely. So after these incredible promises land on him, God gives Abram something to do, a direct act of command in verse 17. Arise, walk through the land, its length and its breadth, for I will give it to you. This isn't just about seeing or hearing. It's a clear call to action and get moving.
And it's a call to active faith, definitely. Our sources really get into the Hebrew verb here, hithale. It's what's called a reflexive verb, and it implies something like keep walking yourself around. It's sustained, deliberate. It's basically an instruction for Abram to quite literally make it yours by walking it, step by step. He's not just meant to observe it from a distance. He's supposed to physically engage with the promise, put his feet on the ground God swore to give him. It's a profoundly physical act of trust.
So it really is faith walking. Like literally, there are no deeds, no surveys, no maps needed. Just Abram's feet moving and his trust in what God said. That's such a tangible way to express something so intangible, like belief. Makes you think about how we claim things today, doesn't it?
It really does. And what's fascinating here too is how this positions Abram as a kind of prototype. A model of faith in action. It definitely echoes later stories, you know, like with Joshua, where every place their foot treads is claimed for God. So Abram is actively, physically stepping into his inheritance, even though he doesn't own it yet in any normal sense. He's claiming it by divine decree in his own obedience.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a physical amen to the spiritual promise. It shifts us from just receiving something passively to actively, personally grabbing hold of it.
Okay, so what does this all mean for Abram right then and there? How does he actually respond? He's got these huge promises, this command to walk the land. What does he do? Verse 18 tells us exactly. So Abram moved his tent and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre and built there an altar to the Lord.
Yes. And his response is incredibly revealing. Our sources really highlight the implications here. First, he moved his tent. The Hebrew is weyela. This reflects his life, right? Nomadic. A temporary dwelling for himself. It emphasizes he's still just passing through. But then, critically, he built an altar, Weyah ben Shum Mizbeh. Now that is a permanent act, an act of worship, dedication to God. It immediately flags up a very clear set of priorities, a statement of values.
Wow, that's a powerful image. A temporary shelter for himself, but an enduring permanent structure for God. His priorities couldn't be much clearer, could they?
Exactly. That's a declaration of ultimate value. It draws this stark line between the temporary nature of human life, you must stuff the tent, and the eternal, the sacred, the altar. And it raises that big question, doesn't it? Where does Abram place his ultimate worth, his security? Notice, he doesn't build towers to make his Shem, his name, great, like they tried back at Babel. No, instead he builds Mizbeot altars that magnify God's Shem, God's name. It's like a complete reversal of human pride, human ambition. It's about God's glory, not his own legacy.
And the location is interesting, too, isn't it? Our sources point out Mamre. The name itself means something like strength, or fatness, like abundance. So Abram sets up his worship life in a place associated with flourishing, with bounty, even though he doesn't actually own any of the land around it yet. What's the significance there?
Yeah, that's another layer of this, what we might call prophetic living. Building an altar in a place called strength or fatness. It's an act of faith in itself. It's like proclaiming God's future provision, the divine favor to come, even when his current reality is being a landless wanderer. If you connect this to the bigger picture, it's just a powerful example of living out the promise now. Active worship, active dedication today, trusting the full inheritance and fulfillment are coming. It's really an ultimate act of faith, choosing God's permanence, God's promised flourishing over his own temporary situation or any kind of human pride. He's living into the promise before it's fully visible.
What an incredible progression we've seen in this deep dive, just tracing Avery's steps. He lets go of grasping based on sight, lets go of material claims, leans completely on God's spoken word, and then responds immediately with tangible physical worship. His actions just perfectly illustrate this deepening faith. It's not just head knowledge, it's active, physical, spiritual engagement. It really is a blueprint for trust.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The significance of that sequence is just profound. It shows faith
evolving, doesn't it? From maybe passive belief to this active, worshipful commitment, even when things look uncertain. It gives us such a powerful model for how we can respond to God's promises, especially when we feel like we're facing empty-handed situations ourselves. It's about aligning our actions with the promise, right? Our present steps with a future guarantee, finding our security in God's permanence, not in what we currently possess or don't possess.
So just to recap this incredible deep dive, we've explored God's Adullam promise, eternal land, the promise of countless offspring, like Karvar Hari, the dust of the earth, the active command to Hethal to physically walk through the land in faith, and then Abram's profound response, building a Mizbe, an altar, a place of worship, instead of some monument to human pride. It's just a powerful story of transformation and unwavering trust.
And it really does raise an important question, I think, for you, the listener. What does it look like in your own life today to choose God's permanence over maybe more immediate gratification? Or what does it mean for you to walk into a promise when the tangible evidence, the fulfillment, isn't fully visible yet? How do we live out that kind of trust in our own contexts?
Absolutely. And maybe I can leave you with this final provocative thought to mull over. What seemingly small, maybe insignificant act of faith or dedication today, could that be your own altar, your own marker of trust in an enduring promise, even when the tent of your current circumstances feels pretty temporary or uncertain, something for you to ponder and explore? Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into an ancient story with such timeless resonance. We really appreciate you being with us.